This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tite. Good morning. We hear a lot about the effective segregation in Milwaukee and the idea that it is the most segregated city in America. That divide is along racial lines, but also often cuts across class lines as well.
For author Tony McCauley, the divisions he grew up with in Belfast were sectarian and extremely violent. It was a place where the Catholic IRA and the Protestant paramilitaries quite literally battled it out on the streets.
But the generation growing up there today knows a very different Belfast. McCauley, who will be in Milwaukee later this week, has written about growing up during part of the period known as the Troubles in a trilogy of memoirs, and they present his young man's perspective on the situation.
Despite their background of violence, the books are very funny and touch on universal coming-of-age themes. We reached Tony McCauley at his home in Belfast, and he began with a primer on what the Troubles were.
Well, the background to the Troubles, basically, it's a sort of, without going into a long Irish history lesson, that period of the late 1960s was the time of the civil rights movement, you know, in the United States as well as in other places. And during that time, there was a civil rights movement that developed in Northern Ireland. And, you know, since 1921, the Northern Ireland had been part of the United Kingdom. And the island of Ireland had, you know, been divided with a border. So we have, you know, Republic of Ireland as an independent state and Northern Ireland as part of the United Kingdom. And the reason that going back into history, the reason why that sort of was seen as a solution at the time politically when Ireland became independent from Britain was that the majority of people in the six counties of the north of Ireland were culturally and politically and religiously British Protestant by identity. However, that was around, 60% of the population, which also meant there was 40% of the population who were Irish, Catholic and nationalist by identity. Really, over the period of time of the Northern Ireland state, then the Catholic minority community, they were not treated with equality in terms of important things such as voting and housing. And there was a sense that this was what had once been described as a Protestant parliament for a Protestant people. And really, all of that came to a head in the late 1960s with the demand for civil rights and for reform in Northern Ireland. However, in terms of what then followed was that what had started out as a peaceful civil rights movement, gradually, through various factors, descended into a sectarian conflict. And really, we went into 35 dark years. So you have the IRA, Irish Republican Army campaign, which was a campaign basically to remove the British influence from Ireland. The sort of response to that was the loyal to the British Crown paramilitary organisations. And then you also had, at the start of the Troubles, then the British Army arrived on the streets of Belfast as well. So you had this ingrained conflict going on for 35 years, where, I suppose, to be fair, most of the ordinary people, we tried to get on with our lives as normally as possible. And you probably see that in my books.
Absolutely. I was going to say that in the middle of all of this, with streets literally partitioned off and fears of Molotov cocktails being tossed and things being blown up, you're all trying to live normal lives. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of disrespect at that level for either side.
Well, for me personally, I mean, what my parents attempted to do was they attempted to create as normal a childhood as possible for me and my brothers and actually for other kids in our community, because they started this little youth club, which, they ran a disco in the 1970s, which became known widely as the Westie Disco, with sort of 400 kids crammed into this little hut every Saturday night. And we, over the years, we danced to the Bay City Rollers and eventually to the Bee Gees. And they tried to create, I suppose, a bubble for us to try to give us some normality, because we were living in very abnormal circumstances. They were extraordinary times, but so many parents attempted to give their children an ordinary life in spite of the horror that was happening around us.
That horror is something you talk about in the first book, that you were a pacifist paperboy from a very, very early age. I mean, this was something that you very much believed in.
Well, I remember when I was writing the book, I tried to think back to how I thought as a child. And as a child, to me, the violence that I could see around me, I could see the futility of it. I could see that the violence only made things worse. And when I heard the adults around me talking, maybe in some way defending things that to me seemed to be wrong, I didn't buy that. I didn't accept that, even as a child. Just looking at things through a child's eyes, to me, that this idea that if someone hits you, you hit them back harder, didn't actually work in Belfast, because what we ended up was, you know, we ended up with decades of tit for tat killings and attacks between the two main sections of the community. Now I know other people, other children reacted differently. You know, their reaction to experiencing this was to join in the conflict, you know, to take their side and to defend their side or to attack the other side. But I felt from my earliest experiences of the Troubles that that certainly wasn't going to solve anything. That was only going to make things worse. And I think I was right.
Did you find that that caused you any difficulty as a child when you weren't picking sides?
Yes. I mean, the interesting thing, when you grow up, particularly as you get older, become as a teenage boy in a conflict, you know, to not be militantly supporting your side could be perceived as actually betraying your side or being traitorous to your side and in some way supporting the enemy. So that's a difficult path to tread. That can be a very dangerous path to tread if it's seen that you are too close to the other side or that perhaps you cannot be trusted with your own side. So it was a difficult path to tread. At times I felt I had to keep my head down and keep my views to myself because I felt I had more to fear from people from my own community who wouldn't be happy with my views as much as I would have to fear from what was supposed to be my enemy.
You talk about the paramilitaries and just the fear that kids would have of running afoul of them. And in Paperboy, you talk about just trying to collect the money. I mean, there was also just thugs trying to steal money. But there was also that other fear of the paramilitaries and of those people who were very pro-Ulster.
Yes. You know, it's interesting. In one of the books, I talk about the term terrorist. In All Grown Up, I talk about going to university. And for the first time, I hear people saying one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter. It's interesting for me, you know, in terms of just the term terrorist. Well, I was terrified for most of my life. I was terrified of the IRA, but I was also terrified of the so-called Protestant paramilitaries who lived on my side of the divide, because these were ruthless and brutal men who were prepared to do anything, you know, either to remain British or to get rid of the British. So it was terrifying growing up. And there was this sense that, you know, they were very powerful men. And if they wanted to target you and kill you, they could do that. You know, there was this term that, you know, I talk about a lot in the books where the term was used, a so-called legitimate target. And I talk in Paperboy about, you know, at one stage it seemed that the milkman became a legitimate target. It started off that British Army soldiers were legitimate targets or police officers were legitimate targets. But then it started to get that, you know, there seemed to be other professions that weren't so obviously part of the British security apparatus who also seemed to be in some way becoming legitimate targets. And of course, I talk about in the books, I talk about my fear that paper boys would become legitimate targets for some reason. So, yeah, so there was that sense of fear that you lived with, either that you could be in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know, say if there was a car bomb in the city centre or at the shops, or that you would be deliberately targeted either from people across the divide or from people within your own community because they didn't like what you said or they felt for some reason you couldn't be trusted and you were a threat to their cause.
A fanatic is a fanatic is a fanatic.
Mm. Yes, it's true. And, you know, I mean, to be fair, because I come from that sort of background, I do understand why people of my age and my generation from both sides, I understand why they got involved in violence. You know, I understand why they chose that route. you know, there's a rationale to it. There's a logic to it. They would say that they didn't feel they had any alternative. It was the only way they could create the changes that they wanted to see. I understand why they think that, but I fundamentally disagree with them. It's not the way I chose. And I believe there's a better way. I think we can, by having dialogue with people who are different from us, by listening to them, by trying to understand them and respect them as human beings, I think we can solve even the most seemingly intractable problems that go back generations peacefully and without resorting to violence. And, you know, that's ultimately what we did in Northern Ireland. We actually got there in 1998. We got there in the end. But, you know, did 3,500 people really have to die for us to finally work that out?
There are still tensions, are there not? Or are those pretty much media creations?
Well, there are ongoing tensions. I mean, Northern Ireland now, for my children, is a completely different place from what I describe in my books. My children would be shocked if they saw, you know, a soldier on the street carrying a gun. And, you know, they have no sense of their lives being limited or bomb scares and being afraid of where they go. And I very deliberately, my children have gone to an integrated school. But having said that, so we're a very peaceful, you know, society now. I mean, Northern Ireland's one of the most, and Belfast, one of the most peaceful cities in Europe, actually, in terms of violent crime. It's a very peaceful place. It's vibrant. It's growing. It's really risen from the ashes. And, you know, there are tourists from all over the world coming to see the dark hedges and all the scenes from Game of Thrones. And we have a tourist industry that we never had before. So, you know, it's a completely different place. And Belfast is buzzing. It's really a vibrant city. But unfortunately, alongside that, we're still a divided society. So we're a peaceful society now, but we're still not an integrated society. We still have these so-called peace walls that divide Protestant and Catholic communities in parts of the city. And I've been involved for many years in working on processes that would result in those walls being removed so that, you know, we can live in peace with our neighbours without, you know, a 100-metre wall separating us. And similarly, you know, as I said, my children went to integrated schools right throughout their childhood. But that's because I, as a parent, got involved in starting integrated schools. Mm. The government weren't going to do that and take the lead on that. So in the integrated schools in Northern Ireland, it's still something around 6 or 7% of children go to integrated schools. The majority of schools here are still predominantly Catholic or Protestant. And, you know, I think until we have a much more integrated society where people live together in the same streets, where people, their children are educated and become friends together in the same schools, that then we'll become a really healthy, vibrant, peaceful society. For me, peace, as in the absence of killing, isn't enough. I think we are capable of so much more.
Do you think your children and their children perhaps will want a reintegrated Ireland? Do you think that is in the future, or do you always think at this point it's going to be separate?
It's hard to say, really. I mean, it's interesting in terms of the political agreement around that. You know, the agreement is between the Republic of Ireland and the British government and the local political parties is that any constitutional change would only happen by the agreement of the majority of people in the north and the majority of people in the south of Ireland, both voting by referendum. And I mean, I would imagine if that referendum happened today, I would expect that the majority in the north would still vote against, because simply the demography is, it's getting closer to 50-50 now, but probably you would have the majority of Protestants and a significant enough minority of Catholics would still vote to stay in the UK. I think what's really interesting is how the Republic of Ireland see us, and people in the south, there has been a sort of a distancing from the north that sometimes it seems as if they kind of see us as trouble in the north. And so, you know, if it actually came to, you know, and given the economic problems there's been for Ireland in the past decade, you know, to make the choice to integrate all that trouble from the north, it may not be a challenge when it comes to actually voting on that, which might contradict a sort of a more sort of visceral or, you know, idealistic idea of an Ireland united once again. So it's interesting. The other thing is interesting on that is there's a growing in recent census surveys, there's a growing proportion of the population, including a lot of young people, who identify themselves as Northern Irish rather than British or Irish. And, you know, the conflict has traditionally been around this idea of, you know, a section of the population believe they are British and Northern Ireland is British, and a section of the population believe they are Irish and Northern Ireland should be part of a united Ireland. But there's this growing part of the population who would identify themselves as Northern Irish, meaning that we are distinctively different from other parts of the UK, but we're also distinctly different from the south of Ireland. And I think that's interesting because you would have both Protestant and Catholic young people would be using that term. Now, of course, those who are very strong in their British and Irish identity would see people who call themselves Northern Irish as kind of a bit selling out, you know.
Well, bringing it back around to the books, have you been surprised by the really kind of warm and wonderful reaction that people outside of Northern Ireland, you know, you'd have a lot of people in Northern Ireland who had similar experiences or grew up in similar kinds of communities, particularly in Belfast. But, you know, it seems to be sort of a worldwide embracing.
It's been absolutely remarkable for me. It's been very exciting and totally unexpected. I mean, I was just delighted when Paperboy, the first book, was published. I was delighted to see it on the bookshelves in the main bookstore in Belfast City Centre. It never occurred to me that a few years later it would be on the shelves in Barnes & Noble in Fifth Avenue. And, you know, that I have a photograph captured of that experience with the look of delight and some surprise on my face. It's been just wonderful. I mean, and the places that I've visited and the people that I've met, and as you say, the warmth that has been received with it, it's just been a remarkable experience. And I think possibly there is an element where people relate just simply to a kid growing up, although it's all happening in a very sort of exceptional circumstances. I wonder if people just perhaps connecting to their own childhood in some way and some of the things that they went through growing up, because some of the things I talk about in my books are, you know, it's about my first girlfriend or, you know, going to the disco and things happening at school, you know, all of that type of thing. It's all in there as well.
One of the things that made me laugh in Paperboy was when the Bay City Rollers did come to Belfast and you and your pals met them and you had no idea what to do. So you kicked them.
Oh, yes. See, yeah, so, you know, for, you know, young teenage boys, you know, we had to, you know, in the midst of this conflict, we had to be seen to be tough. So, you know, while we waited at the stage door for the Bay City Rollers and to our disbelief, they arrived and they were standing in front of us. And of course, the girls squealed and screamed their names and wanted to touch their heroes. And the boys didn't know what to do because we wanted to look really cool and really tough. So we had to express ourselves in some way that was natural to us. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we kicked them. I have kicked Bonnie. I have kicked a Bay City Roller.
Does he remember it or did?
Well, you know what? It's really interesting. Facebook is a wonderful thing because one of the Bay City Rollers has contacted me and he's read the book. And Alan, who was one of the members of Bay City Rollers, actually his wife contacted me on Facebook and to let me know that he loved the book, but he wasn't the one I kicked.
Did he remember that incident?
Well, he remembered coming to Belfast. He did. He remembered playing in the Ulster Hall in Belfast, I think. And I think what he seemed to be saying was they appreciated that, you know, they brought a little bit of light into the darkness during the Troubles, because I mean, many of the pop bands were afraid to come to Belfast, and, you know, so for a, you know, major stars to come and even spend time and play a concert, feeling safe enough to do that was quite unusual for us.
And how wonderful that they would do it and sort of give that normalcy, you know, that feeling of like that you're just like any other teenager hanging out, waiting for the band to show up.
Exactly. And I mean, now Belfast has this huge arena and we have all the major stars from all around the world, you know, come and play here. But for us, it was such a big deal for the Bay City Rollers to come to Belfast.
Well, do you still listen to them at all? Does that bring back if you happen to hear one of their tunes?
Of course, yeah. It's interesting because since the books come out, people keep buying me their CDs for Christmas. Yeah, so there is that connection now. People do connect me with the Bay City Rollers now.
Well, Tony McCauley, it has been such a delight having a conversation with you. We're so looking forward to having you here in Milwaukee. Are you going to read from the book?
Yes, I'd love to do a book reading. I'm actually just been recording the audiobook for Paperboy, which will be coming out later on in the year. And I really enjoy doing book readings, you know, and because of there's a sense of humor in it. And so I really enjoy doing that as part of my visits to the US as well. And people seem to appreciate the accent, even though I do have to translate a little bit sometimes.
Yes, but that's okay. It's a cultural exchange.
Exactly. That's good. That was a good thing.
Tony, again, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it and looking forward to seeing you here in Milwaukee.
Yes, I can't wait to get there. And it's been lovely speaking to you, Bonnie. Thank you very much.
Tony McCauley is the author of a trilogy of memoirs, Paperboy, Bread Boy, and the latest, All Growed Up. He lives in Belfast, but he'll be in Milwaukee later this week as one of the cultural ambassadors of Irish Fest.